We have got lots of apologies from the members. Okay, let me start with the apology from the minister and the deputy minister. The minister will not be able to attend as she's having a meeting with key stakeholders in the waste economy in preparation for the presidential launch of the Good Green Deeds program. So I suppose that's taking place in Pretoria. It's in Pretoria. And the DM will not be able to attend. She's currently in KZN, winding up her late brother's estate. So she will be coming to Cape Town this afternoon. And Honorable Khadebe will not be able to attend. No reasons given. All right, Honorable Makubela is still not feeling well. I've been trying to get hold of him. I was wondering what's the problem. But the committee secretary says that she managed to speak to him yesterday, so he is not well. Honorable Kekana went to the doctor. And Honorable Nyambi is landing this morning. Honorable Mkunu via some other place. She should be on her way later today. So as we move closer and closer towards this parliament rising next on the 20th of March, there is too many apologies. Maybe there is a bit of a confusion because last week Parliament dissolved itself. So most people, most members might be thinking that Parliament has dissolved. There's no need to come to work. But actually we still have got a lot of work to do in the next 3 weeks before we rise. We still must discharge our responsibilities of conducting oversight, scrutinizing reports, doing what we are supposed to be doing, debating in the House, adopting legislation and so forth. So we're still here. And I think I did raise it with the chief whip that we need to be allocated more members because as we are now, we are very thin. If a motion could come this morning, I will be defeated, except the fact that I've got my own vote and a casting vote, so I've got two votes. And I'll exercise them both at the same time. Okay, so DG, welcome. We asked that we must postpone the briefing last week, because there was some information that was not there, particularly the financial information. I hope all the information is here today, because the document I was sent could not open because there's a lot of pages. It was a very big bundle. So I don't know if any of the members did manage to open the presentation, but that one that I received was too big. I don't know why it was that big. It's because of all the information we asked for, or what is the situation. But I hope I have not yet laid my hands on it, no? Only now. So I hope that we should be able to engage with the issues as we raised the last time and find some finality around our concerns around this program. Okay, we will then hand over to the DG and then do the opening remarks. Tell us who will be taking us through the presentation.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. The documents are provided more electronically. The members are given the discs in order to be able to go back to some of the historical information. And Chair, you do have a set of the actual documents, but also the electronic version. I'll request Dr. Christo Maroy to start with the presentation, Chairperson, and we have now the breakdown on the financials is also made available, so we'll take you through the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, Honourable Members. Allow me just to quickly reintroduce the team. Last time we were a bit rude to the members not introducing our team at the left, today in white and not in yellow anymore. Sharon Lawrence, the account manager for Working on Fire. Neva Ngobo is the director for the national programs and amongst others, Working on Fire. Mr. Nick Elliott is a director of Kashugu, joining Trevor Abrams on behalf of Kashugu, their senior finance staff could unfortunately not attend today because they, with the CFO Dia and her team, to be audit ready by the end of March, Honourable Chair. We apologise on behalf of them.
Chair, there is a meeting today with a treasurer with the AG to discuss some of the issues, particularly around the is modified cash standards in relation to those findings that were on Working on Fire. So the CFO is there with the team, but the people that are here today will be able to answer the questions.
Okay.
So the finance people of Working on Fire, they are there also. Okay. So is there somebody who's got financial?
Trevor Trevor will have to answer, Honourable Chair. We've gone through the presentation with the finance people yesterday, or what we've added. I should add, Chair, that we took the same presentation and we expanded where you wanted us to expand. We didn't take things out. We'd rather add it to the presentation. So I'm not going to waste your time on slides that we've already presented last week. We'll just skip over them just to remind you about that.
Okay, we'll proceed, but I think we don't have to do things like this. I think if there's key people who are not available, should have notified us so that we decide what to do. We will be zooming more on financial arrangements, and we don't have the people who run the finances inside the implementing agent itself. It's not a good thing. We should at least have been notified in advance that financial people are not available to come and explain the financial aspects of the whole thing. But I will allow that to proceed, but you must know that normally we don't like to do that, because when we ask detailed questions, we need somebody who has got the necessary competence. People who work with this finances to respond to that. But Mr. Abrams is here. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm just going to skip over slides that we've already dealt with, the introductory slides, the reference back to the 23rd of October last year's meetings. I'm going to skip over that to governance and the nature of the program in terms of risk management and natural resource management. Then this slide, Chair and members, the slide number 7. We've gone back just to put a context to how did we get to where we got to or where we are. In our terms of reference, which you have a copy of in your discs, on your discs, as well as in the hard pack, the scope and extent of work for that was advertised at the time was fire awareness, fire prevention, prescribed burning, resource operational and jurisdictional coordination, fire detection, fire suppression, and post-fire rehabilitation.
Okay, what page are you on this?
Number 7, slide number 7, Chair. But the title of the slide is Original Request to Bidders. Have you got an older version? Oh, then you were given the wrong version. No, it can't be.
Do we have the wrong documents?
This slide was in yesterday's this presentation that was marked 2702 Achring 602 2019. Mm-hmm. That's the one that this should be. If the members have got their discs with them, they can just plug it into their computers as well.
Which computers?
Then the financial is it in there? How is that possible?
Maybe the bank regulation.
Yeah, but it's important that we give that to the. This is the wrong one that you guys saved. That shouldn't have been in there. That's a previous version.
Okay, when did you give this as a version? That you gave.
Okay, let's.
What do we do? How many slides are not in the pack that we have?
It's 4 slides, Honourable Chair. It's only 4 slides that are in there that's missing.
Okay, so what do we do with that?
Chair, the slides that I'm talking about were the slides to illustrate the integratedness of the work that we do and how did we negotiate the contract from there. And then from there on, Trevor will unpack the finances.
Okay.
Should I?
Is it last week's? Okay, there's another package. I don't know whether members have got it there.
There would be a copy in there as well. Yeah. Apologies for that misunderstanding, honourable members. May I go ahead, Chair?
Yeah, go ahead.
Chair, from the terms of reference, I've already indicated on the scope and the extent of work is shown on the left-hand side of that slide. And then you draw that, we drew that over into the key focus areas, so the key activities that the program should have in order to achieve the scope and extent of the work on the left-hand side, which investing in fire protection associations, advocacy and awareness, detection, dispatch and coordination, ground operations, aerial support, incident command system, capacity building and transformation, monitoring and evaluation, and research. And based on these things, we've received, there were 18 people attended the briefing session at the time, and from those we've received four submissions that were considered. One was the Western Cape Aerial Emergency Services Organization, the Supergroup Fire Services, Resotec, and Forest Fires Association, who in the end was then the successful tenderer. Then we started negotiating, Chair, and we came up with the memorandum of agreement and then schedules to address the key focus areas. And those schedules are listed on slide 9, referring to governance, again, capacity building, referring back the exit strategy. At the time, the National Treasury gave us the approval to enter into a 7-year contract. So the exit strategy was put into a contract, into the contract, with a timeline for certain milestones for us to achieve. Then the drawdown schedule, how do we compare performance to expenditure and payments, implementing entity fees, which we've discussed at the previous meeting, register, asset register and asset management, fire protection associations, to what extent does the program support the Department of Agriculture, Forestries and Fisheries for capacitating fire protection associations. Obviously, dispatch and coordination is important. As we've mentioned during earlier meetings, our response time within a radius of 50 kilometers, 30 minutes, and further than 50 kilometers is an hour. Fleet management, which is the fleet, and we will get back to that, the vehicles. Incident command, unlocking of third-party resources that was discussed at the previous meeting and that we will bring up again, ground operations, awareness, insurance, and intellectual property. So there are specific schedules for all these within the contract, and the members, the pack that the chair has and the discs that the members have got all this information. Detailed the final signed documents in them. Chair, this slide, the next slide, number 10, has been presented before. Basically, the reason why we followed the route that we did is in order to improve centralized decision-making, to streamline the pillars of integrated wildland fire management, quick decision response time, seamless decision making, greater control of integrated wildland fire management services, value chain, and specialized skills needed within the pillars, like aerial support, ground support, fleet management, awareness, etc. Then, Chair, the issue of related parties was discussed in some detail during the previous meeting, and we would like to refer to the SBD4 forms. I don't always know, DG, what SBD stands for, but
Standard bidding documents.
Never say.
So just to say, the reason why we were going back, so that because I recall the questions that were asked by the chair on the actual model, just to follow through exactly how the model was put together. It was put together on the basis that what was understood as a need was an integrated fire management service, and all of those being services that will then be rolled out. When the program started under the Department of Water Affairs at the time, Water and Forestry, it then was, with the coordination of Treasury, we were looking at opportunities of providing the service across. That's why that first slide that Christo was showing, to provide a service for fire associations, but to roll out the base stations across the country, because when we started, we're also not having a presence across all provinces, as we do currently.
Thank you, Gigi. Chair and members, I went back to the contract with regards to the definition of related parties, and we wanted to make sure that we convey that message very clearly. There's a whole long list of definitions that relates to related parties. The one, though, that's important in relation to working on fire is the entity and the implementing agent. This is the entity when we refer here to the entity is the related party, and the implementing agent are members of the same group, which means that each parent subsidiary or fellow subsidiary is related to the others. The related parties with regards to working on fire is specifically around this point. There are other definitions, which is there's a whole list of, I think, about 9 definitions between individuals and entities, but this specific item is related to the to related parties. And within your SBD forms, you have to declare those related parties, and that's what happened at the time, which FFA did. Chair, then we're going to play musical chairs. My colleague Trevor Abrams will take over from now on.
But what was the requirement of the contract with regard to related parties? What is the point that we are making?
The point that I'm making, Chair, is that especially when you've got a big bid like that, there's always related parties, because there's specialized services that needs to be delivered. And FFA and the supergroup bids, they had different related parties that they came to the bids with, that this one will supply fleet services, for instance, and this is how they're going to procure aerial support, etc.
In essence, the related parties are declared and determined upfront. What service would they provide at what cost? And the assessment of the bid was based on that upfront. So you, as they are now approved, they don't then begin to reprocure those services. Automatically, they then go according to the rates that were decided at the time for those related parties. So they are not going out to undergo another supply chain process when they are in actual execution, except for the services that were not covered in those schedules, like the protective clothing, which was the finding of the Auditor General. So in those cases, they then have to go out on a different supply chain process according to the prescript. Thanks. All of those related parties, like you procure, when they say declare your subcontractors, declare, so then you don't have room to change things around after that approval. Hence the process was then, even in terms of setting those rates, the Treasurer was involved in those discussions and finalizing and determining how the service would be provided at what cost.
Okay, what we would like to suggest, the slides between this last slide and the financial management, we've actually discussed in some detail in last week's meeting, so we would like to save time, unless you prefer it otherwise, that we skip to slide 34, because that's where we got stuck the last time, where you stopped us and you sent us home for some homework. The Working on Fire detailed financial data. As you page through those slides, you'll see we've actually discussed all those already, unless you want us to run through them again.
No. I think it's still fresh. It was last week. So there's no need.
And then Trevor will take over with the detailed financial data.
Okay, so which presentation are we using? This one? Or the way out.
It was only those four slides that I've presented. It seems like that was missing.
I prefer to work on this, the colored one. So we skip the board of directors, the executive committee, provincial structures, steps taken to improve governance, management fees.
Chair, if I may say that if you want us to go back to any of those slides, you're welcome, but we don't want to hide anything, but we have discussed all these last time. And the functions of the implementing entity or the implementing agent, the management fees, those functions that needs to be funded from management fees. Then we discussed the management fee as such, the schedule as such at the last meeting.
Okay.
And then asset management we've discussed. And then we've discussed the assets, the on-balance asset sheet, and the... Okay.
No, it's fine. You can move to the financial data.
Okay.
Of course, there's still a relationship with some of the financial stuff. But let's start from there.
We left the slides in so that we've got a reference, Jay. So
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay, then Trevor will take over.
Morning, Chair, honourable members. I think we're responding to requests for some details in terms of the financials. And I'll take you through the different years, starting off with this current year until January 2019, so it's not the full financial year, but the pattern itself, as I'll be showing, is not much different from year to year. So out of the budget, year to date, we spent 214 on wages, that's 36% for beneficiaries, as have you asked, Chair. Those people with the EPWP programs is actually designed to assist. Sorry?
Slide 35.
It's a pie chart, the first pie chart. Yeah, you got it? Sure. Yeah, okay. So we've got 36% for wages, and then the salary component to manage this program is 15%, or 91 million has been paid this year. There are other benefits, which I will unpack further. It's a 2%. We then have PPC, protective clothing and protective equipment, which to date is only 2% because there's some large orders that are coming through now only. So that's a bit behind the normal pattern. Training is 7%.
So the salaries and the wages, you have separated them?
That's correct.
Okay.
The wages are governed by the EPWP ministerial determination. The rest is... market related in getting qualified staff, be it a HR personnel or...
So how many people on their wages?
Is it 4,000, at the moment 4,300 approximately.
Okay.
We've got a summary of the current KPI report later on in the presentation.
Employees.
Sorry?
The salaried employees?
At 320. 7% of the personnel in the program in management.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think we're ending up there with training. The transport is 12% of the budget to date, 73 million. The FPA support is 1%. Aviation is 7%, 41 million. The management fee is 9.6 as per contract. And OVC is 44 million, which is 7%. Now, I'll unpack that because I think... OVC is operational variable cost. In other words, the costs that are generated from us doing work. And I'm going to unpack it further now. So if we go to the next slide, you in fact find that the first section we're dealing now with our other benefits and training. And I think in many respects the benefits, if we go back just to the first slide, you'll see that if you totaled up all those percentages, 51, 53, 55% of the budget is in fact directly related to personnel. And that I say is probably the highest in any EPWP program in the country. If we look at what the other benefits are, we have the UIF, which is 4% of that total, medical expenses, 1%, workman's compensation. And I should indicate in terms of the workman's compensation program we have, in the event of death on the job, and we have had two fatalities recently, the spouse of the deceased received pension for life and the children up to the age of 18. So it's quite a generous provision. And I don't think any EPWP program has anything like that that we've managed to negotiate. We also have funeral and accidental cover, which is 70,000 rand for funeral costs, or we apply that to any permanent disability. Okay. Now, the big component of this cost that we put together is management. Of the management, some 4% of that has in fact come from management, applied to management training. Whereas the participants' training is 59%, 41 million. Now, just to clarify that is not a grant we give to Kishugu Academy. This is paid on a daily training basis. In other words, it depends on the needs of the program. We require to train X in particular skills, and there's a daily rate. So that is not a transfer payment. It's in fact a payment on the basis of specific services that the program requires. In terms of personal protective clothing, that's 8%, 5.9 million spent to date. As I said, there's going to be additional cost this year. But that again goes out to open tender, and that's how we source that. The personal protective equipment is much more varied in terms of suppliers, because they range from hard hats to lamps to rake hose to buckets where they, not buckets, the backpacks where we spray the water with. So there's a varied range of supplies that contribute to that personal equipment. So if we look at the figures that came up for other benefits, training, PPC, this just gives you a sense of what we're spending it on. The other big category which we were asked to explain is but the operational variable cost. So all that operational variable cost, 90% is spent on property rental. The size and scale of the program dictates that we have a presence in each of our provinces, in some cases something like the Western Cape. It's so extensive that we have an office both here in Cape Town area as well as in George for the Southern Cape region. So those are the office rental requirements. The telecommunication, internet, courier services, another 15%. Obviously, because of the spread of our things, we have a lot of travel and accommodation because our bases, as you'll remember from our map, is quite widely spread. So even with a head office here in Cape Town, for our personnel to reach the various bases to do their particular functions require quite a bit of travel and accommodation. Depreciation is 7% of that amount of money. Professional fees, from time to time we bring in professional assistance from specialists. Our IT cost is about 7%. We have a very effective fire awareness program. Our communication products are fairly well known, both on YouTube our printed media, as well as our social media. Our social development program is a program that reaches out to all our firefighters in all our provinces. And annually we have an Azishe Games where it's a common practice in the firefighting service to have some sort of sporting activity which builds on the kind of fitness that we need in the program. That's 4%. Our office equipment repairs is another 6% of that particular component of the budget. And then research, operational supplies, whether it's the products we put on the alien invasives when we do remove them, the herbicide, whether it's the ration packs that we have to supply, and the sundry expenses is another large component, 70%. So that sort of deals with the large elements of that. Just in terms of the training, obviously in terms of the academy at Kishugu, they have their own cost structure that they have to get. As I've said, they, by virtue of the contract, give us a fixed rate of what it costs per day to do a training. So it's called a training day. That's one of the key currencies that we deal in. We report on how many training days we've actually accumulated in a year. But they have their own cost because they have their property costs, their services, electricity, water, their personnel, their development of their material, as well as the catering and accommodation of our personnel when they're there. So that's how the Kishugu training, in fact, accounts for its cost structure and how it builds WAF in terms of per person day trained. In terms of the fleet, likewise, the fleet component has to cover the operational costs. What did he do? You're moving. No, I'll move it here. Under fleet, there's to cover the variable costs of fuel, servicing, insurance, as well as the capital costs of servicing the loan with the bank in terms of providing the fleet, as well as the monitoring. One of the big innovations we brought to this program has been a detailed monitoring of the operations of our vehicles, as well as an alert system which tells us when there's speeding, when there's heavy braking, when there's dangerous driving. And what we saw in our graphs when we monitored this, a rapid and amazing change of driver behavior. I think it's quite amazing to see how the incidence of reports of violations in terms of our system, the parameters, decline, because obviously there is consequence management when people must behave. It includes seat belts, so people are not allowed to drive without having their seat belts engaged. So those are all the costs that filter into the fleet management component of Kishugu. In terms of aviation, I'll just tackle it a bit more detail. This is the kind of aviation resources we're dealing with. In the summer season, we have 10 spotters. In the winter summer season, which is essentially the Western Cape, the winter season, where we cover a much broader spectrum of the country. In the summer season, we have 9 helicopters down here. We've just added the Black Hawk, which is the larger U.S. military helicopter that's just come down on Saturday. On Sunday, it was already deployed at the fire. The UEs are able to drop about 1,000 liters a time. The Black Hawk is able to do 3,000 liters. Obviously, a much more expensive piece of equipment. It's a twin-engine, two-crew operation. But that's come down here together with the PDMC. We've managed to facilitate it coming down. In the winter season, we have 13 helicopters on duty, and we have 4 bombers both in the summer and the winter season. This year to date, up to January, this is the kind of hours we've flown. In the helicopters, 1,269. In terms of spotters, 1,053. And in the bomber, 386. But from the financial perspective, Chair, if I just draw our attention to the slide, this is the contribution that DIA makes to the aviation. So we have standing revenue of 42 million. What that means is that enables us to have an aircraft on the ground, crewed and regularly serviced without any flying. So obviously in the event of the fire, you can't have to call on the fire engine that's far away, so we have our aviation resources are dispatched to bases all around in the fire-prone region. And to keep them there together with crew, this amount of money is applied to that. DIA also contributes $8.4 million to flying revenue, and that's not really the flying to the fires, but in fact it enables us to move the aerial resources back and forth in terms of what is the seasons. I should indicate with climate change, the patterns of seasons have changed quite a bit. Typically our summer season starts in December and continues until April, and we usually had a May downtime before the winter season started June, running up to October. I think we all remember, in fact, the Knysna fire was in fact in June. The Southern Cape fires now that happened now was in October, before what would be typically the fire season in the Western Cape. So that's the DIA contribution. But if you look at third parties, these are the people who also contribute to the aviation resources. They contribute $36 million in standing fees and $46 million to the flying fees. And so DIA's contribution is actually, of the totals, we have 38% from the budget and 62% comes from third-party revenue. Chair, I'm going to continue with a similar pattern that was up till January this year. I'll take us similarly quickly through the other years, but I think it might be worthwhile if there's any questions at this point to invite some questions about it so that we can address it and not have to come back to fall back.
No, proceed there. Remember, you are not the chair here. You are coming here to present.
Yeah, I'm aware.
So give us the information. If we think that we need to interject, we will. But proceed.
Okay. If I may proceed then into the next slide, deals with the actual year, the full year, if you like, for 2017-18. And there we see a very similar pattern where 36% is on wages, 17% on salaries, the other benefits, 2%, PPC, 3%, training, 7%, transport, 12%, FBA support, 1%, aviation, 6%, the management fee, 9.6%, and the OVC. And then what I do again is I take us through what that other benefits are. We'll see again the UIF payments, 4%, medical expenses, 1%, workmen's compensation, 7%. And I should indicate the workmen's compensation is a function of our safety record. If we have a certain amount of claims in 1 year, it impacts on the actual fees for the subsequent year. So if one goes through the years, you'll actually see variations in what the workmen's compensation factor actually comes in. Funeral accident cover, 1%, management training, 2%, and then 57% of on participants training. Personal protection clothing was 18% for that year, and the equipment being 9%. If I were to unpack the operational variable costs, that's rather interesting. What's happening to our slides here?
Do you have in the documents you gave us, do you have a detailed expenditure report? Because the pie charts here is not something that is giving the actual picture, you know, in terms of the details. Is there something that was submitted in the documents?
Chair, a copy of the financial statements, the audited financial statements for 2017 and 18 is included in the pack.
Okay. Which one? Which pack?
Be in the thick pack, Chair.
Okay, proceed there.
Chair, in terms of operational variable costs, the IT is doing something interesting to the graph, but on the paper version, I think it's more consistent. There's 21% spent on property rental, 22% on telecommunication, internet and courier services, travel and accommodation 19%, stationery 5%, professional fees 7%, IT 6%, the fire awareness, communication, social development program and Azisha Games 4%, office equipment repairs 3%, research operational supplies and sundry 14%. And then the same pattern can be applied as we go through 2016-17. I've done the same 2015-16. I'm not sure you want me to go through each of those separately, but the pattern is pretty much the same.
No, it's not necessary. Research operational supplies. What would operational supplies mean?
Chair, that includes herbicide, where we do herbicide application. It includes the costs of feeding people when they are deployed to fires. Research, we do research on various aspects of fire management and a range of sundry kind of expenditures that related to us actually doing the work. These are all the costs that come up in the course of us actually being deployed to fires, or whether it's the educational work that we do.
Okay.
So, Chair, 2015-16, we have the similar pattern. Would you like us to go through
2015-16? No. Let's proceed to the summary, financial summary.
Yeah.
After the
check, yeah. I think what we've just included here is just an overview of the different key components of the Kishugo company in terms of its financial performance over the different years. In training, as I've explained, all these units serve WAF and other areas. So these are not purpose-built vehicles solely for working on fire. In the case of training, it does service other parties outside of working on fire. And if we look at the 4 years that we've given here, you'll see the profit that it ends up with in year 15 is 2.1 million. In the year 2016, it actually recorded a loss of 1.7 million. In 2017, it did quite a bit of external work. We got 7.9 million, and 2018, 5.9 million. In the case of assets, this asset vehicle retains all our aerial assets besides the fleet component, as well as the other properties and other assets that Kishugo Holding has. And there you'll see a pattern, a more consistent pattern of 7.5 million, 5.9 million, 11.9 million, and 13.4 million. In the aviation, again, this is not simply business related to working on fire. We also do some anti-rhino poaching work at the moment in KwaZulu-Natal. We've done a number of operations with the elections in Mozambique, with the flood relief in Malawi. So its pattern also shows you from 2015 a 12.6 million profit. In fact, I think that's probably when the Mozambique elections took place. In 2016, it was a loss of 2.5 million. And 2017, 2.3 million profit. And then 2018, recording a loss of 4.4 million. I should indicate with the aviation company, it's a very precarious business because you can bank on a certain amount of revenue by placing aircraft available, but you can't bank on the utilization. People only pay when they actually use your vehicles. So you still need to have the aircraft service, you still need to have the fire crews there, I mean the crews, the flying crews, and all the intendant services. So you're really at the mercy of the fire season in terms of, you know, what your revenue is. It's a We actually take a view that there are seasonal dips and troughs, so that we have to sort of even out. So if you look at the cross, it does sort of even out. It's not the most profitable business around. And then holdings company, you see a similar pattern from 2015 of 9.3, then a 500,000, and then a loss. We incurred quite a bit of debt in 2017 as a result of a venture that didn't work very well. And also in 2018, a loss of 598,000. So that's just an overview picture, just to give a sense of what the performance of these companies have been in the course of providing support to Working on Fire, even though their business is not solely related to Working on Fire. Chair, one of the issues that were raised in our previous presentation is the issue of Kishugu, and I think we just want to refresh something that it's just gone off here, just out there. We did present these slides previously. I can't read there. And I think this was the situation there where we had the shareholding that we presented to this portfolio committee. I think it was in 20.
Why is that slide? Is it there?
That's the two slides that were added this morning, Trevor.
Yeah, but okay. Can they make a copy?
Yeah, I think we've made a copy before.
Oh, okay. Yeah, proceed.
Okay, Chair, so what we're showing is the shareholding that we've shared with this committee, and I think of relevance, the two yellow blocks were the two founders, Johan Heine and Chris Austin. And the B shareholding at that point in time was essentially 31%. I think we're just reporting to this committee is that as of now there have been some changes in the shareholding, and the B shareholding in fact has now gone up to 36.7%, and we are currently in further restructuring in terms of shareholding. And we plan to be at a B shareholding of 41% shortly. Chair, then if I may just address the issue of third-party resources. And what we have here is quantum of money that we've sort of earned from external parties. And in terms of the contract, this is applied directly to the program. They deal with external clients. Variable cost recovery, so when we use our fire trucks, etc., in a fire situation, we, in most cases, are able to recover the transport costs at a particular fixed rate. We've also obviously incurred some interest over the time, although under the MCS there's some discussion as to whether this needs to be returned immediately to the department. And then the employee tax incentives in fact gives us a relief in this quantums of 10 million, 15 million, 16 million, 16 and then 8 million. 8 million obviously 2019 is the year to date up till January, and then some other income amounts. So we do earn quite a considerable amount of third party revenue. And what that has done is that over the last 2 years, the increment in the total WAF budget has been well below inflation. In fact, it's been in the order of 3.4% increases annually, whereas our salary wage bill alone goes up by about 6%. So if you recall the pie graph that details the percentage that we spend, some 50-odd percent as personnel costs, we obviously have a shrinking and tightening budget. So it's we've actually been able to thrive and succeed without any retrenchment as a result of the third party resources. Okay?
Honourable Chair, I'll be taking over now the original instruction for last week was to look at the turnaround strategy as well, and the whole department is going through a turnaround strategy with regards to audits and the audit findings. And what we've done is we've just presented the progress that we've made with regards to the audit findings by the Auditor General for the 2016-17 financial year and then the 17-18 financial year. The first one was conflict of interest related parties. As we've already indicated, we've drafted addendums which we've presented earlier on. So that is in the process of being finalized. Assets relating to fleet management services. Sorry, DG. The personal protective clothing. Kishugu established a company, but that in the end didn't work out, and that went out to the market again, Chair. And then assets relating to fleet management services. We've already presented the text in the new addendum to the contract on that, Chair.
So what was the arrangement? Were this a fleet provided for by Kishiku or by ATSA Fleet Management? What is the arrangement? Because remember last week you said the Kishiku is the one that provides the fleets.
Yeah.
So I see ATSA here raised by AG.
That was a lease agreement between Working on Fire and Kishugu and APSA Fleet Management Services, Chair.
How is it working?
Apologies, Chair.
How is it working? How is it structured?
Trevor, can you respond to that?
APSA supplies the vehicles to Working on Fire, or does it supply to Kishugu and then Kishugu supply to Working on Fire?
Chair, APSA provides finance to Kishugu Assets and Fleet Management, and Kishugu Fleet Management provides the full service, fleet management service to Working on Fire, including tracking and repairs, etc. APSA is just the bank, just the financier.
Okay.
Chair, in terms of the contract, what the AG was raising is that how Kishugu or Working on Fire provides for financing is not quite our business in essence. What we want is the asset, and we need, if they finance it through a lease arrangement, it is not supposed to affect us as the state. That's why then the corrective measure is to make sure that the contract in terms of that those terms is very clear, and it enhances our ability to oversight, they will require to control those assets.
No, I was just thinking that Working on Fire can get the contract directly from upside, acquire the fleet without going through a third party.
Chair. Yeah, I think it's not simply the financing. Working on Fire's own finances would not necessarily be able to access that type of financing from APSA, but more important, it's fleet management services provided by Kishugu, not finance only. So they manage the tracking, they manage the maintenance system, etc. So it's not simply a matter of accessing financing from APSA. What Kishugu Fleet provides is a full service fleet management.
Okay, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Then supporting information to relating to the implementation fee. I think we've discussed that. The information was provided to the AG in the end, and with regards to what the implementation fee is being used for, and we've presented that earlier, Chair. Annual financial statements of 2005-15, a detailed response addressing all the queries received and not further inquiries being received from the Auditor General. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure by working on five people, Pty Limited not recorded. These were traffic fines, and I think at the previous meeting Trevor sort of referred to this, where those traffic fines were actually recovered from the, or not recovered, but the individuals that got the traffic fines had to pay it. Then the VAT ruling, Chair, I'm afraid we haven't got finalization of whether VAT should be paid on the services that's rendered by any of our implementing entities in the environmental programs or not. And that's a problem not specifically related to working on fire, but to all implementing entities, and the department is engaging with the Auditor General about that. Assets control deficiencies. The deficiencies that were found was addressed subsequently to those audit queries. Then in response to the 2016-17 Auditor General's report, the DG commissioned the internal audit of the department to do an audit on working on fire in order to see whether they've responded to the implications of the Auditor General's report. Operational cost and directors' remuneration. It was concluded that there was no duplication by the internal audit of the department. Non-disclosure of related parties. The draft addendum to the current agreements were commissioned or were done, and as I've already reported, those addendums are effectively ready for signing. Legal services has recently indicated that they're happy with the way it reads now. Personal protective equipment or equipment and clothing, and the health and safety or the risk management PPC committee, the protective clothing committee of the program, has addressed the incidents where poor quality clothing was listed. Fleet lease agreement, consultations, events have now overtaken this point four, as I've mentioned. The text to address the fleet management has already been done for the addendum to the agreement. Then we get to the Auditor General's report for 2017-18. Prepayments not recognized for payments made in advance of receiving goods and services. The Working on Fire does report on implementing entities' fees, as was expected. Other implementing entities, Honourable Chair, this is not just a problem, it wasn't just a problem with Working on Fire, it was a problem with all implementing entities, but Working on Fire reported on management fees anyway in the past. In their KPI reports, the Key Performance Indicator reports, they report on that every month. Expenditure was not split between capital and current expenditure classification, and the response to that is this will be done with as part of the ongoing process to address the fleet management in Working on Fire and the 2021 exit strategy. As we've presented at the previous meeting, Chair, in one of the earlier slides that we've skipped this today, we've agreed that Working on Fire will enter into an agreement that by the end of 31st of March 2021, there won't be any vehicles with an outstanding balance So DEA will get the vehicles fully paid. What I should remind the committee of, Chair, is that the moment that this contract comes to an end, DEA will have to have a maintenance contract in place that we will have to go out on tender before that in order to keep these vehicles operational. Then revenue and other income earned by the project, not recorded by the department. That was a working on fire has been reporting on it at the oversight and executive committee, but the department didn't report on it. The department is in consultation with the Office of the Accounting General with regards to this, and the relevant changes will be addressed in future contracts. Chair, that's not specific to Working on Fire. Working on Fire Pty Limited, similar to a PPP arrangement. Chair, I think we've expressed or we've given extensive feedback on that, and that's also why we've included that thick document, the Working on Fire feasibility. And at the time, that feasibility study was commissioned by the National Treasury. And the feasibility found, in consultation with Treasury, that the PPP or that the agreement that we were looking for was not a PPP but an ordinary contract. Non-EPWP salaries. I think Trevor has already expanded on that in his the salary costs in his financial feedback. I don't think we need to engage in this in too much detail, Chair. Then Trevor will take over again on the key performance indicators, just to give you an idea of, you asked earlier on how many people are employed, beneficiaries or participants, the EPWP participants. It's 4,566, but Trevor will take over.
Thanks, Chair. So on a monthly basis, Working on Fire reports, as we indicated in an earlier slide last time, on a range of indicators that we do. And what we have here is both our target in the second column as well as our actual, and what it means in terms of variance. You'll see that we're mostly green, with one red indicating there, and I'll come and address that. One of the key currencies in the EPWP program is how many person days we achieve, and we've achieved some 1,050,000 as opposed to a target of 1,082,000, and I think by the end of the year we'd have caught up with that. In terms of full-time equivalents, that's 230 days a year worked. We've actually achieved 4,566 days per full-time equivalents as opposed to a target of 4,708, and that's again something we will be catching up. Our participants, as I've indicated here now, 4,395. Our target, we're at 4,193, and we should be reaching our target by the end of the year. Our youth, we're a little bit ahead of our target. Females, we're marginally ahead of our target. With disabilities, we're significantly ahead of target. Our total training days, we're at 32,000 out of a target of 35. The one area that we lag behind is in accredited training, because quite a bit of training this year has been devoted to refresher training. And the refresher training does not necessarily have the level of accreditation that the original training have. And that's because the program hasn't expanded as much, but we have seen a need for it. In terms of our disabling injury frequency rate, the target is 3. We're below the target, which is a positive sign, and we're at 2.14. Our social development events and interventions are also ahead of target, as well as our fire communication, and I'll touch a bit more on that one later. And then if we look at the production issues, I think here we have a very, very telling story in terms of prescribed. These are all the preventative measures that are done. Prescribed burning, we're running at 116%. Fire belts, we're running a bit below, but also our manual fuel reduction is above. So we've actually cleared a significant number of area as part of the preventative activities. On our BE score, we're way ahead of our target by the contract. Same thing in terms of our fleet, the seats available, that's the indicator that we are measured on. We're at 99.6%. Our helicopter, our spotter, and bomber days are all ahead of target. In the case of bombers, it's not included as part of the contract. It's basically helicopter days and spotters. We're well ahead of that given the fires that we've had. Sure, if we had another disaster. In terms of dispatcher days available, we are about 97% of our target. The remaining two is not targets per se, it's more indicative patterns. So we estimate we'll attend some 2,232 fires, and we've actually only attended 1,964. I should say, however, the fires we've attended have been much, much more larger than the scale we typically attend. I mean, if you're looking at the Southern Cape fires in George, in Vermaaklikheid, the fire here at Betty's Bay, and also in Overstrand, they've been large and protracted long fires. We've dispatched more teams than we expected to, and that's precisely because of the size of these fires.
Yeah, move towards wrapping up.
Okay, I'll do so quickly. I think one of the other areas we've also responded to has been the drought relief project, and that was a special grant that we also responded to, and the indicators there are indicating a fairly successful intervention at very short notice, which we were able to do.
If I could interrupt, Mr. Chair, what we're quite proud of is the 1,225 hectares of cleared areas in the mountain catchments of the Western and the Southern Cape. These are drought priority areas that was identified by the National Disaster Management Center. And in fact, this drought response program was the first one that was operational after the money, the 380 million rand, was allocated to the department.
Chair, I'm going to go quite rapidly because none of these slides are new to the committee. It's our management representation, as you can see, in terms of our executive, and there's the profile of our executive, our senior management, middle management, junior, and trainees. And if by our representation data, if you look at our participants, you'll see that we are overwhelmingly African in terms of our makeup, 7% colored disabled. The age group, you'll see that we're predominantly in the 18 to 25, although the group 25, 26 to 35 is growing, and 31% females. I think, Chair, just to wrap up, one of the areas that the program is not properly recognized for the fire awareness education. We've reached 1,392 schools in January this year, 100,000 learners, 7,000 educators, 1,007 community, touching some 105,000 people. In fact, over the last 7 years, we've reached 2.1 million people. These are actually activities mostly carried out by our firefighters who are trained to do these activities. In terms of our communications, we have 12 newsletters and 32 provincial newsletters. Our media coverage, we've estimated by an independent company that does our profiling, is worth 72 million. We distribute to some 1,700 people online. We have a YouTube channel where we have videos, some 41 videos. We have Facebook presence, Twitter presence, as well as our website, all of which is followed quite extensively.
Chair, and then I will take a minute to just to wrap up. The EPWP incentives, the department and all other departments' budgets are linked to incentives with regards to how successful we are in creating jobs based on our budgets. And we've taken the Working on Fire program. And in summary, I'm not going to go into detail in this table, but what's important, the percentage growth in incentives that was earned by the program over the last, since 2015-16 was 33%, or a total of 21,000 full-time full-time equivalent jobs created. And then lastly, Chair, with regards to the recommendations or the conclusions around the incentives. The program consistently performed, and this is feedback that we get from the EPWP, beyond what was allocated over the last 4 years. And as I've mentioned, it's increased by 33%, and that's it, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Question, members? Honourable Pennant.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to get some clarity on the when I'm talking about the aviation and flying revenues. The third-party revenue is quite substantial. Just give us an idea of who those third parties are and how are they billed for that. Just some more clarity on the third parties, please.
Okay. We only have one question. Okay. From my side, I just need to... There's another program in the department. There are two. There's a... what do you call it? EP... Infrastructure. And then there's this one. There are two divisions, sort of. Natural resource management, and then there's that infrastructure. So in the natural resource management, you've got working force in the main. It's working on water, working on fire, and then the other programs. In this current financial year, how much DG has been allocated to EPIP and how much natural resource management? You'll check it, okay.
Well, the implementers in natural resource management programs, Chair, it's 1.87 billion, including working on fire and the DIA entities, plus then the private and other government implementing entities for working for water, working for wetlands.
1.87.
But that doesn't represent the staff costs, and that's only contracting costs. The total budget is 2.1 billion. Yeah.
EP, the infrastructure.
I will quickly have a look at the MTF. The EPIP ones are also shown on the. Yeah, the figures for 2000. And
okay, let's get Abrahams to answer Honourable Perrin's question. We'll come back to the allocations.
Thanks, Chair. The issue of third party, the way the aviation resources are used, we have to get a request from a third party to have aerial resources, and they bear the costs of it by hours, based on an hourly rate. Okay. I know the next question would be, what is an hourly rate? We've worked out various formulas where we try to have people who want to pay more for standby and then less for a flying hour. And we're still trying to find a middle road to making it cost effective. We found out that where people were attracted by a low flying hour and contributing more to standby, when it came to using the resources, they were still reluctant to pay the extra time. So by and large, it's a user pay basis. Who they are, they can be completely varied. It can be a private landowner, can be a nature conservation agency, can be a municipality. So whoever the landowner is, in terms of the Veld and Forest Fire Act, you have a responsibility for managing a fire on your property. So typically the large fires that we've seen here in the southern, western and southern Cape have fallen within the jurisdiction of district municipalities or local municipalities at times. I would add, though, in the Western Cape, the Provincial Disaster Management Center has come up with a formula where they've offered to pay the first hour. So in other words, that's as an incentive to call out aerial resources quickly and hopefully tackle a fire quickly, because very often when the people are sitting with their calculators, by the time the aerial resources come out, you have something like you had at Betty's Bay, where the fire goes on for 12 days and at huge cost, you know, with the aerial resources that are deployed there. So it's really, I think in a nutshell, the landowners that are required to pay.
But who are they?
DG, they different landowners. They can be Conservation Cape Nature, it can be sand parks. For example, the whole Table Mountain here, the management of fires on the Table Mountain down to Cape Point is by sand parks. Many of the other wilderness areas in Southern Cape is handled by Cape Nature. But there are properties that, you know, fall under jurisdiction of municipalities. And then there's private landowners, often organized under fire protection associations. That, and you also have, in some cases, forests that are still managed by the Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries.
Okay. So it's DAF, it's COCTA, it's certain municipalities, and it's private landowners. And some of the conservation agencies of the provinces. So those are the third parties. So in the presentation also, they show in the slides in general that we have that, they were explaining the other day the institutional arrangements. We have those departments that are mentioned all the time under the CREST. It's Environmental Affairs, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Cooperative Governance, Water and Sanitation. And when we also report to Cabinet, we report on the basis that it's those key departments that are receiving the service through the Working on Fire program. Chair, your question, the budget is $1.87 billion. I'm now reading Christos. Sorry, it's for 2018-19. You want it only for 2018 or before 2017?
No, just one financial.
2018 is for natural resource management is 2.132342. That's 2,132,342. For environmental protection and infrastructure is
Sorry, maybe I'm just a bit slow this morning, but I'm struggling. Corner. There's a fire. I'm struggling to understand, you know, with all the DAF and the private and the municipality and the district municipalities, you know, who actually gives the go-ahead? Maybe I'm not capturing this, but when does Working on Fire actually go, or do you sit back waiting for a phone call for one of these people? You know, I don't, to draw the line of, I mean, are we going to sit back and wait for the municipality, or are we going to go, you know, because there are going to be question marks. I just need clarity on that.
Okay.
And then, Chair, it was also mentioned that there was aviation revenue for assisting with rhino poaching. Now, who makes that decision? Who pays for that? Who calls in? Who decides we must go and assist KZN? I think we need clarity on that too.
Okay. Thanks, Chair. I think you're touching on a very valid conundrum. Who calls that? We are not the first response entity. We work with partners, so we have our bases are located with municipalities, with conservation agencies, with FPAs, you know, so we at their call. Yes, we get ready when we see a situation developing, but we're not the landowner. We can't sort of come bundling in there like the fire brigade, which its requirements to respond within a certain time. It's a big issue. And I'll give as an anecdote, we turned up at Neisner because you'll recall the day before the Neisner fire broke out, the newspaper was saying the worst storm in 30 years. We were getting ready to assist with flood relief. Instead, we had a fire break out on us. When we turned up at the municipality and we said we've got four teams ready, they said we don't know what to do. So we avail ourselves as a service, but it falls under their jurisdiction. It does present certain issues. We are exploring areas where we have an agreement where we can go if it happens. But we are not basically a first response service. Okay. On the issue of rhino poaching, that is Kashubu Aviation's operations independent of working on fire. So that's why I said all those entities, be it training, assets, aviation, have businesses beyond working on fire. Yeah.
Just to indicate that, remember that disaster management is important. So the whole interdepartmental structure that has a plan when something happens, how the communication takes place and so on. So we participate in that structure as a department, including the weather service. But as you may be aware, working on fire has also the capability of getting the data and the information about extreme weather events, especially those that are linked to fire. So they have the ability to communicate with the department specifically in order for us to then indicate with the state of readiness for them to come in. Thanks.
Okay. The Working on Fire program was conceived as a building capability within the state to respond to fire emergencies. That's how I understand to be the scenario. It started, in fact, I think it's something that the Department of Environmental Affairs has inherited. Initially it was in the water and forestries. That's how it was conceived, because the enabling legislation is the responsibility of forestry. So it started being there, and as government was reconstituted differently, departments merged and so forth, it ended up being in the Department of Environmental Affairs. So from what the DG was saying, that there was a broad agreement that it must be housed there, but it must service DAF, it must service COCTA through the Disaster Management Center, it must service water and sanitation and so forth. So that's the thinking, and that's the broad architecture of the program as it is now. But the question, I think, for us is whether government is getting value for money from this project. And that's why we have been asking so many detailed questions about the program. It's a pity that today we were brought in the pie charts, which is something that we didn't ask for. We asked for details about that expenditure, especially on the operational costs. Now you brought in the chart, pie charts. It's fine, we are not going to we're not going to turn you back again because of that, but for me, I would have loved to see the details of all the expenditures. But just looking at the pie charts, for 2017-2018 financial year, actual expenditure was 678 million. Now I'm looking at this cost and looking at the wages, which is about 36% of the total cost. About 243,000. That this is the money at the end of the day that went into the pocket of poorest of the poor, people who really need to get the money and whose government is targeting as part of this program, because this program is implemented under the EPWP. Now the rest of the money went somewhere. To the related parties at the most. Related parties which are the Kishiku companies. Kishiku Fleet, Kishiku Aviation, training and stuff like that. Well, you can argue that part of the training, of course, was for the benefit of the workers. Or those employees, but there is a disproportionate amount of money that does not go to the benefit of where it's supposed to go. It's going. You see, this contract is skewed in favor of the implementing agent, the suppliers, the companies, because those are the people who walks away with most of the money at the end of the day. They may supply their knowledge, their skills, but at the end of the day, government is not deriving the value that is supposed to be deriving from the program. I was asking a question about EPIP, which is also an EPWP program. Here at the end of the day, people are employed to deliver infrastructure. That infrastructure benefits the community at the end of the day. So you employ people through EPWP, they come and build a lodge. That lodge is used for the benefit of the people. But here you spend almost 700 million. You only benefit 36% in the form of people getting paid, using that money in the economy and so forth. But the bulk of the payment here, where does it go? You see, that's the question that I think as part of reviewing this mechanism, this program, we must ask ourselves. There is no infrastructure that is left. There's nothing, there's not even fleet. You're only going to get fleet after 5 years when we've paid almost how many billions of rands. The value of the fleet, is it going to be worth it at the end of the day? So there is no benefit, as far as I'm concerned, for this program. There is a lot of money that is going in the pockets of the individual directors. I don't know what skill are they bringing, except the skill of one director, which we can see. Mr. Abrams is very passionate about the program. There are other directors, I don't know what their role is in the whole thing. They are simply pocketing the 53 million management fee. What they bring into the table, nobody knows. No infrastructure that is left at the end of the day, nothing. We're building that capacity to respond to the fire situation, and but the bulk of the money doesn't go to where it's supposed to go. I think this thing needs to be reviewed in light of what I'm saying at DG. It's benefiting the few. The money is going into the pocket of a few individuals who don't bring anything onto the table except one director that we can see that is involved in all of that. But the rest of the other directors are not doing anything. So that is my fundamental problem with this program. I'm not sure what are the other members thinking, but my view is that we're not deriving much benefit as government. In any case, as environmental affairs, we're not responsible for the implementation of that legislation. So, I see Honorable Steenkamp wants to comment. No, I'm just doing the summary. According to my observation about the program.
Okay, then I would like to place it on record that that is your opinion, Jay, not mine.
Yeah, you can give us your opinion.
So I knew about working on fire before I started as an MP 5 years ago, and coming from a place in the northwest where there's a hell of a lot of fires. I know that you work with, I think it's FDA, et cetera, et cetera. And quite honestly, I'm a little offended that you would say that you don't know what benefit working on fire has given to government. I think, on the contrary, it has absolutely strengthened, especially our rural areas, where there's no fire trucks, where there's no firemen, where it takes them forever to get there. It has saved lives, and in my opinion, apart from the finances and stuff, I think the service that Working on Fire has given South Africa needs to be commended.
Thank you very much. Honorable Pede. Okay. Well, that's the view from Honorable Steenkamp. Unfortunately, I don't see it that way. Unfortunately, I think that we are spending significant amount of money which does not benefit the poorest of the poor in this instance, which is going into the pockets of the few individuals. That is my view. I don't dispute the fact that the services there is existing. We can see with all the fires all over the countries, mainly in the Eastern Cape, in the Western Cape. I know that the bulk of the service does benefit the Western Cape because it is based largely here, and there is a presence there in the provinces. But there is a need for me, as far as I'm concerned, to review this model. That, I think, at the end of the day, that review has to happen, because if you look at the cost-benefit analysis, I don't think that the state is benefiting much from this. Honorable Pedden, I was wrapping up. Okay?
Yeah, there are different views coming from this, from members, but I think the way I understand it, this contract is in 2021, so if there's extends into 2021, so if there's going to be a review, it can only be then. Am I correct?
Yes, of course, contractually is until 2021, but I don't think government can, before it reviews some of these provisions in the contract. There is a need to review, for instance, a couple of issues, especially those flagged by the Auditor General. The one part is the fleet, the one part is the protection, protective clothing that has already been reviewed. There could be other aspects of the contract that can be reviewed to make sure that you spread the benefit to a number of people. There is one company here that is benefiting, which is Kishiku, that has got a few stakeholders or few shareholders and so forth. And if we are going to use the EPWP as a model, which seeks to make sure that a lot of our people receive employment opportunities, then you'll realize that it's not really consistent with those principles. And that is my point, and that's the point that I'm making. So for now, there's not much that we can do, but I think that the department can go back and review some of the aspects so that when the time when this contract comes to an end, at least government is able to come up with a model that will be more beneficial to our people. Okay, so we've come to the end of that. That's our comment. Unfortunately, on Mr. Abrams, after we've closed the meeting, the meeting becomes closed. So you had an opportunity to give us your report. Oh, announcement, okay.
Chair, we'd just like to extend the invitation we have to the committee before to come and visit and see the actual operation and regret some information that was wrongly conveyed.
Come again.
The actual headquarters of Working on Fire, Chair, is in Mpumalanga, not in the Western Cape. So the invitation is for the honourable members, if possible, to come and make time to visit and see the operations and how they are set up on the ground in Mpumalanga.
Oh, okay. Well, if we do have time, we will come. I'm sure Honorable Steenkamp will be much more willing to come and see what's happening that side. We have got 3 weeks here, so maybe we will come. We will do our oversight when we have risen. Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Members, for coming. Thank you, DG. Thank you, everybody else, for coming and giving us the report. We will then meet again at some other point in the future. Don't know when. This was our last engagement on Working on Fire. So the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.